Welcome back to Logical with Ludmila, where we untangle the legal knot so that you don't have to. I'm Ludmila Yamalova, U.S. qualified lawyer based in Dubai. In each episode, we break down complex law into clear, practical insights that you can actually use. In today's episode, we're talking about drinking and driving in the UAE, or driving under the influence of alcohol. Despite UAE's and Dubai's in particular vibrant nightlife and social culture, the rule has not changed. There's a 0% tolerance of alcohol in the UAE while driving. So, and it is a legal standard, regularly enforced with consequences that touch every aspect of a person's life, from their license, to their car, to their freedom, to their immigration status, even their criminal record. And this, by the way, applies across the board. It applies to UAE nationals, residents, expats, tourists, and short-term visitors, and anyone operating a vehicle, whatever the vehicle might be, a car, motorcycle, scooters, anything with wheels and a license plate. And importantly, you don't need to be speeding, swerving, or causing an accident. Even a routine checkpoint, a random stop, or a post-accident event can trigger mandatory alcohol testing. So now let's break it down to what is this zero tolerance really means, and what law governs it, and how the cases move from through the system from the time of a police check, for example, all the way until you have your final judgment, and all the penalties that may potentially be applied, and also how potentially the police can detect apprehend such instances, and also the safest, perhaps, and most practical alternatives to avoid ending up on the wrong side of the law. So let's start with a legal framework. So what's the law that governs drinking and driving in the UAE? So there's two sets of laws. One, the main law is the traffic law. The other one is the criminal law. So the traffic law is the Federal Decree Number 14 of 2024. And it's a very new law. It actually just came into effect in 2025. So the good news about this law is that it has, while it still maintains zero alcohol tolerance in the context of driving, at least the penalties have been lessened from as compared to the previous law. But there's still, in terms of the standard of how much one can drink and sit behind the wheel, it remains the same, 0%. And the penalties, but the penalties are different. There are multiple, and we'll talk about them shortly. So the other law is the UAE penal law or the UAE criminal law. And that's the law that sets, among other things, standards, for example, for detention, under which circumstances the person can be detained, for how long can be detained, and sort of the general process of how the case will travel from one authority to another. But in under both of these laws, is just generally speaking, driving under the influence is not treated lightly, nor is it handled administratively as quickly as some may think. There's perhaps anecdotes, stories, reports of people who believe that, okay, well, yes, we know that drinking and driving is not okay, but it's going to result in a financial fine. And so that's often the belief. Sometimes people might have even heard some stories or anecdotes from others. And it may actually be the case. It may be that in most cases, although the penalties in the laws are fairly extensive, and we'll talk about them shortly, it may be that depending on the circumstances, in some cases, if somebody is apprehended for driving and then with some level of alcohol is detected, they may be released and then the case will sort of will progress through the system, and at the end they'll just have to pay a fine, and in their minds the case is resolved just by virtue of paying a fine. But behind the scenes there's a lot more that's going on. There's actually a formal process that is required to for the case to be transferred through from start to finish. So it's not just a fine, for example, akin to a traffic fine. So if you're driving, you get a fine, you pay it, and you're done. It's not quite like that. In fact, in the high level, it ends up being a proper court case, and we'll talk about it. It's a court case that's administered by a traffic court, but it's still nonetheless a very formal court case. And then the penalties, by the way, are fairly significant and quite diverse. So the penalties can be anything from fines. And the fine, and there will always be a fine, but the fine will range anything from 20,000 dirhams to 100,000 dirhams, depending on aggravating factors such as, you know, whether as part of the incident there was an accident or some kind of property damage or injury to others, or if it was a repeat offense. So obviously the financial penalties in the range grows depending on the sort of underlying circumstances. In addition to the fine, there's also the law does provide and for a jail detention. So, and as a result, courts may impose jail time, particularly in aggravated cases or repeat offenses. And remember, even before sentencing, there is often a pretrial detention due to weekends or administrative delays. And I'll give you some specific examples of that. So now we've got fines, financial fines. So we have jail or slash detention as a different type of penalty. And the third is a driving license penalty. So the license, so there's a suspension of a license. So after the first offense, it's minimum of 3 months. So even though you may end up just paying a fine and walking away within perhaps a minimum detention, if at all, there will always be a 3-month suspension on your license. In other words, after this, after the case, you will not be able to drive on your own for at least 3 months. For the second offense, there is a longer suspension or potential revocation altogether. And the third offense, extended suspension, revocation, and black points. Basically, your license gets canceled. Then, in addition to the license suspension, there is the vehicle confiscation. The vehicle is usually impounded for 3 months. And it is possible to have an early release, but you have to pay at least 6,000 dirhams to the authorities. And that's obviously, again, in addition to the fines and the license consequences and any kind of detention. So the vehicle confiscation or a fine to pay to have the vehicle released early, which, you know, is not insignificant, so, you know, 6,000 dirhams plus. And then obviously then there's also the criminal record, because this kind of a conviction becomes part of your police record, and removing it, it's a process. You have to pay the fine, you have to clear all the travel bans, and you have to apply for a clearance certificate. And so this whole process of just kind of clearing your record is also administratively involved, let's say. And there's a number of things that need to be done in order to have a completely clear file. And now finally, there is also a possibility of, we're talking about fines still, a possibility of deportation for non-residents, obviously, or for residents or non-UAE nationals. And that means, so for expats, the deportation is, the courts can always order deportation, especially when there's an accident or injuries or sort of repeat offense involved. And in practical terms, prosecutors very often request deportation just kind of by way of their standard prosecution claims and accusations. That's it's not insignificant is the point. So if you just look at this, so just by way of kind of a summary, drinking, so the UAE still maintains 0% alcohol while driving, and while this is not as gravely punished as it was before, the fines and the penalties are quite extensive and fairly severe, and it could be anything from hundreds of thousands of dirhams to detention, and more importantly, to deportation. So that's kind of the high level of what to expect. Now let's talk about, what it actually means in practice, in real life. And this is relevant because, again, unfortunately, these kinds of cases have become a lot more common than they used to be before the law changed. People sometimes take it a little too literally, right? Again, Dubai and the UAE in general continues to evolve and become a little more progressive, and often people are a little too quick to interpret what that kind of evolution in the legal system and the legal framework means. And so, and they sometimes read or wish to interpret laws a little bit too liberally to suit their own narrative, which means, oh, well, yes, fine, I'll drink and drive, but it's just, you know, I've heard from somebody so-and-so that it's just a fine, I'll pay a fine, just like a traffic fine, and I move on. While, but the reality can be a lot more, and in most cases is a lot more significant. And it's interesting, I'll share some examples at the end, because sometimes in some of the simplest cases, the reality becomes quite protracted, quite involved, and somewhat cumbersome or burdensome. And some of the more complicated cases, because of sort of the set of factors involved around those cases, actually, they get away with a lot lighter punishment. I'll give you examples shortly. Bit of a cliffhanger. Okay, so let's start from how can this happen to begin with? You know, when would the person be potentially apprehended? And it's, you know, from the arrest, you know, kind of to release. And this is it starts always with the police, and then there's the. There's the arrest, and then the police will take you to jail, and then from there you'll be transferred to the prosecutor, and then the prosecutor will transfer to the court. This is just a high level, right? So it's police, detention, prosecutor, from prosecutor to the court, and then after the court, once the judgment has been issued and the fine has been paid, then there is all this kind of administrative stage of where you need to obtain all sorts of releases and clearances and vehicle retrieval in order to, you know, to A, settle the fine, B, be released from detention, C, clear your record, and D, get your car or your license, and so on and so forth. So that's, you know, that's kind of the different stages. And each stage involves multiple agencies, mandatory documents, and fairly strict procedural steps. So let's kind of talk about how can somebody be apprehended to begin with. Obviously, the most common example that comes to mind is when somebody is driving erratically and they get into after having drunk, and they get into an accident. And anytime there's an accident, usually sort of it's expected that the police will do a breathalyzer test, and then sort of everything kind of goes from there. But it doesn't need to only happen in those cases. Sometimes what can happen is that the police will just do routine checks. And there are, by the way, fairly routine checkpoints that are set up in different parts of the country, especially around around more vibrant nightlife areas. And this is something that's really important to remember, is that the authorities obviously know which places, which venues host what kind of events, around what sort of types of what time of the year, and therefore draw crowds. And perhaps these are kind of the areas that are more known to have these kinds of incidents. So as a result, police often set up checkpoints around these very areas to visitors and patrons to these establishments. But actually, these checkpoints these days are a lot more common than what one may think. So it does not necessarily need to involve an accident, right? Or somebody reporting you to someone else. It can just be literally just a kind of an incidental slash routine check. And then obviously, if somebody is driving erratically, that can also trigger. Those who have lived in the UAE long enough, have traveled here long enough, would know that the UAE is very technologically connected. So even if there's no police behind you driving, but if the cameras obviously capture, there's cameras all throughout the country, so cameras can capture this sort of radical driving behavior. And so that can also trigger police check. Obviously, once you're stopped by the police, then the police will always perform a breathalyzer or kind of a test. Or if you are taken into detention, they'll also do a blood test. And then there's the evidence that the authorities need to have a conviction. Now, in the UAE, it's not really typical, perhaps, to say no to the police. So the police wants to do a breathalyzer test. I mean, that's just what you do. You have to agree. And if you don't agree, I guess they can obviously will take you to detention, to jail. And then there, there'll also be a blood test. So these, I mean, it's that's kind of one of the things about, you know, when you live in a foreign country, you need to know their laws and their procedures and their sort of practices. And that's, you know, it's perhaps in some other countries you can say, well, I'm not going to do a breathalyzer test because this is my right. So in the UAE, you're expected to comply with the police's instructions. So that's, you just need to be prepared for that. And if your reading obviously shows zero, then you're treated. That's not an offense. But if you have any kind of level of alcohol, then you're basically immediately arrested. Now, after that, so this is where the police apprehends you. Then obviously you'll go in the car with them, and somebody else will take care of somebody from the police will follow with your car. Or will, if the car has not been an accident, then somebody will drive the car, or it will be impounded and towed to the police station. So the police has to, as part of their initial encounter with you, they obviously ask information, they ask questions, and all that makes it into a report. And that's the police report. And that's in the police report, there'll be a detailed narrative of all the sort of circumstances under which you were apprehended and alcohol reading and all the details that preceded the incident, in particular where you were potentially drinking. They might ask you, you may not remember, depending on the level of alcohol in your system. You know, and even in these kinds of cases, even if you didn't drink very much, but when you are stopped by the police, people, it's quite shocking, and it's quite it's quite stressful. So people may act in the way that they would normally not act, and forget things or say things a little too quickly. Whatever it is that, you know, is said does make it into the police report. So now the police captures all that information and inputs it into their own report, and then they transfer it to the prosecutor eventually. Then, as I said, the vehicle gets impounded, and then eventually, once the case is finalized, you have to either let it be there for 3 months, or you have to pay at least 6,000 dirhams. And then in certain cases, the fees can go up to 20,000 dirhams. And that's, you know, in the event that the car is not damaged. But ultimately, the longer the car is, also you may be liable for like the parking fees as well. Then as part of the report, this is, and I'll explain to you where all that information sort of ends up as you go through the process. But there's also another report that's issued by the Ministry of Interior. So that's yet another agency that you don't really see when you deal with the representatives of the police. But then you are placed into a jail, right? And so that's the jails here are managed by the Ministry of Interior. And so the Minister of Interior issues a report, and among other things in the report, there is obviously the driver's detainment status, the type of prison facility that they were placed, and whether the detainee was allowed visitors or calls, or any kind of identification details, and their residency status. And then this report also becomes part of the file. Now, you may want to understand, like, how do you go from being apprehended by the police to actually being placed in jail? So that's the usual way or progression of a case. So the police, when you're being picked up by the police, you're taken to the police station. And in the police station, they have jail, and you're being placed in jail until one or the other thing happens, either until you have a bail that was issued, or the court issues a decision and final decision that, well, you know, that leads to your release. So until that time, the jail is kind of is a natural consequence of this kind of offense. So this is important to to understand that it's not just a slap on the wrist, you know, it's not just a fine, a financial fine. There will always be some kind of detention. Now, detention could just be, 24 hours, one night in jail, or it could be anywhere up to 14 days or 2 weeks. And I'll explain shortly how you can go from one day to 14 days. And that's more subject to the UAE penal code or the criminal law. And then at some point again, the person will have to meet with the police and the people in jail and provide more additional information, potentially another blood test, and then perhaps another round of explanation or narrative how they ended up in the situation that they were, depending, obviously, because presumably some people might be a little too inebriated to give clear account that will still make it into the report, but then there will be another opportunity to do another report, another sort of statement. That would also make into report, and then you'll have, I guess, two of those narratives in the ultimate case file. So that's the file that gets prepared by the authorities, that i.e. the police and the Ministry of Interior or the jail that have handled you up until that point in time. So now this file then gets sent to the prosecutor. And then the prosecutor, it's the public official that acts ultimately in the context of criminal law, acts on behalf of the public. So the prosecutor then will may ask additional questions, and there'll be a meeting with the prosecutor. Now, the way it happens is that unless you were granted bail kind of early on, which is not so easy, then you're meeting with the prosecutor, or you're hearing with the prosecutor is online. So you are in jail, and the prosecutor, so you'll be led into a room within the jail compound, and then you will be given the opportunity to appear before the prosecutor online. And so that's when you're talking to the prosecutor, this is where they ask you additional questions. They'll ask for, among other things, whether you have an alcohol license and sort of the circumstances of the drinking, and that's also when you can ask for bail, or at least the prosecutor can make a decision whether to grant bail at that point in time. So, and then that's when the prosecutor, on the basis of what the prosecutor has already seen in the case file, right, from the police and the Ministry of Interior, added on or supplemented with the questions and information you provided them during the hearing, then they will issue basically a transfer report to the court. So it's police, jail, prosecution. Now, and then the prosecution prepares its own accusations, which then later gets transferred to the court. And that's on the basis of that report or those accusations that the police or the court will issue a decision. Now, in the meantime, you're still potentially in jail. The sort of the practical reality is such that, as I mentioned earlier, you can be detained for anything from one day to potentially 14 days. And the reason for that, in practical terms, is that prosecutors, they work regular hours, which in general terms exclude weekends. So if you are detained on a Thursday night and kind of late into the night, and by the time, and you're not the first one to be on the roster for the prosecutor on the Friday morning to review the file, so you might have missed your window for the prosecutor to actually hear your case, because your case was just brought in a little too late. And so, and the prosecutors will not have this hearing I described shortly. They haven't had an opportunity to have a hearing with you, and therefore discuss or decide your request for bail. And so therefore, if you're detained on a Thursday, chances are you're going to, the next time you will see the prosecutor through this online hearing will be Monday. So this is Thursday, no, at least part of Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you are in jail. And so, and then on Monday morning, you'll be presented before the prosecutor, and that's where the prosecutor will ask you questions, and then you can ask for bail, and it's up to the prosecutor to decide whether they want to grant it to you or not. And that's because under the criminal law, not the traffic law, but the criminal law, the prosecutor can keep you there from 7 days to a maximum 14 days. So if there's a default detention is 7 days, and then they can renew it. And in most cases, for for the prosecutors, because there's so many cases before them, they tend to renew this detention automatically, or I guess by default. And that's because we're talking about still traffic court, right? And the traffic court, everything happens a lot faster. So it moves much, quite quickly. So in those cases, for example, with a prosecutor, it's easier, faster for the prosecutor to just refer the case to court, knowing the court will hear the case a day or two later than deal with the bail request, because the bail also is a formal process. In some cases, the prosecutors are often you can expect the prosecutors will just renew the bail, not the bail, will renew the detention, and then refer your case to the court right away, and then the court will schedule a hearing, during which will then make a decision. And so, and that, by the way, is kind of an interesting sort of stage, and that's because, and I keep saying this is a traffic court, which means everything moves much faster. It's quite an expedited process. So what we've seen before is that, so the hearing with the prosecutor on the Thursday, on the Monday morning, and then the prosecutor asks questions as the hearing, and then supplements his or her report, and then transfer this to the court, and then the court schedules the hearing basically a day or two later. So this is kind of how fast it is. And so that's what we've seen, is that the after the initial meeting with, or the hearing with the prosecutor, then the court was already on the Monday. The court heard the case on Wednesday, so it's literally just a one day in between. So, and when the prosecutor prepares this file, transfers to the court, then you're still in detention, and then that point you can also, I mean, at that point and even earlier, you can actually bring in a counsel or an advocate to represent you. Now, in cases like this, I tell you, in practice, sometimes it doesn't. It's better to just kind of let the system work its way, kind of on its own, if you don't have any complicated circumstances. That's because anytime you submit a defense, and that's why you would bring in a local advocate to potentially submit a defense for you. Whenever you submit a defense, that can prolong the case. So if it's a simple case, it's better almost not to make a defense. But if there's any kind of documents that that should be submitted on your behalf that would facilitate or help your case, for example, a copy of your alcohol license, or if your driver's license was missing or something, and then something was missing in the file. So you can submit during this time, you can submit documents into the file, and that can be done through the Dubai, if it's in Dubai, through the prosecution portal. If the case is more, it's perhaps more complicated, that's when you will appoint an advocate. An advocate then will try to prepare a defense for the meeting with the judge. So once the judge hears the case, because it's traffic, and if there's just basically the drinking and the driving and perhaps no other kind of aggravated circumstances, then the judge will be able to issue a decision much faster. So in our case, we've seen it be issued in one day, or at the end, basically, of the hearing, just within a few hours. Now you've got the judgment. So now the judgment can be, as I mentioned earlier, can include all those things that that we've discussed in terms of penalties. But what we have seen, in practice, is that when the prosecutor refers the case to the court, the prosecutor includes the whole, so to speak, kitchen sink of all the potential penalties that could be applicable under the law. And that includes, among other things, the penalty, longer detention, and then the highest fine, and deportation. So yes, deportation is also one of the potential penalties that the prosecutor can legally request for the court to consider. And that's what we've seen in practical terms. So when the prosecutor does refer, they literally go for the kind of the heaviest and the harshest penalties. And so they request for the judge to apply the harshest penalties. They don't necessarily specify which one, but they do kind of go through the litany of laws that are available to them. And they usually request the harshest penalty, which in many cases includes deportation. So once again, going back to what I said earlier, it's not just a slap on the wrist. It's not so simple. Something as innocuous as you had a beer or two and got into the car and got stopped at a checkpoint can, under certain circumstances, lead to at least the prosecutor's allegations or requests for deportation, and ultimately can lead to deportation if there are other aggravating circumstances involved. So now in the simpler cases, the court will just issue, will have a hearing, and that the hearing as well is online because the person is still in detention and as unless they've been released on bail. And that's where the court issues decision setting out what the penalties are. So there will always be a financial penalty. So as I said, it's anything from 20,000 to 100,000 dirhams for the first time offense. And then the, also the decision will state that the license has been suspended for 3 months and minimum, and then also there'll be comments about the detention. So this is quite interesting. So if you've been in jail, let's say for a week before the judgment came, then you get your financial, and there's a fine that's imposed on you. And at the end, it's just really kind of a fine, except that in the process, you are still in jail. So you get credited 100 dirhams per day that you've spent in jail. So let's say if you were for 10 days, you get 1,000 dirhams back often. And that's the fine that you're, so your fine can be reduced by this amount. And that's the idea, is that the fine is meant to be your penalty. So if the verdict is the one that signed the penalty, then you have penalty, financial penalty, plus you have detention. So it's considered like a double fine. So that's why the courts then offset one penalty against the other. That is, your 100 dirhams for every day of you spend in jail then gets credited to you against your financial fine. And that's basically kind of what you have at the end. You've got a court judgment that describes the incident, describes the circumstances, and describes the fine, and ultimately a verdict, in particular regarding sort of detention and such. Now you've got a judgment, and that judgment basically says it's a fine. So now all you need to do is pay a fine, but you're still in jail. So it's not like you have a judgment and you walk out right away, and it's not like this happens automatically because the judge posted the judgment in the system, and then your word in jail says, knocks on the door, says, okay, now the judge declared you, basically issued the judgment, you have to pay a fine, leave. It doesn't work like that. Actually, it still requires a few hands-on sort of case management, if you will. So someone who represents you, I guess your advocate, your lawyer, or your family member, needs to make sure that they take this judgment and they go and they pay this fine. Once they pay the fine, then they need to get a release letter. But it's called a prosecution, it's a suspension of search letter. And that suspension of search letter you can only receive from the prosecutor, prosecution website as well, a portal, once you've shown that you show the court the verdict, and then you show that you've paid the fine. Now, with sort of presenting those two documents to the prosecutor, then you can also, you will get a copy of what's the letter called the suspension of search, from the prosecutor, and that's on the basis of that suspension of search letter, then you will be released from prison. But so the judgment alone is not enough to release you from prison, and even the judgment plus the fine are often not enough. You do still need to have this formal letter from the prosecutor that basically called suspension of search. In other words, that your fines, your penalty has been paid, and now they don't need to come after you to basically punish you. So you've already been punished. So you've got the suspension of search, and that's now you're released. But now you still have your vehicle that's been held by the authorities, and so then you need to also request the vehicle release approval. And that's prosecution must issue the sort of formal letter for both again. So that letter also comes from, so the two letters come from the prosecution. That's after the court judgment. So it's a suspension of search letter to get your release and the vehicle release approval to get the vehicle released. And then to release the vehicle, you kind of need to go, in most cases, you need to go there into yourself, present the document, and then pay the 6,000 dirhams or more to get the vehicle released. But you cannot drive, because there's always the financial fine is always linked with the suspension of driving license for 3 months. So in the past, the authorities might have taken the physical driver's license. Now it's all digitally connected, so you don't really need to present your driver's license. But you are not able to drive, so whenever you go to pick up your car, somebody else come with you to take the car. That's basically at this point. Once you've done all that, so once you've gotten the judgment, you paid your fine, you got the suspension of search letter from the prosecution, the vehicle release approval, then you can get what's called a sort of, if you want to have your record sort of clear to show that you've done everything, you're no longer kind of in the crossfires with the law, then you need to sort of close the file, so to speak, from your perspective. You should also apply to kind of like a good standing certificate. So that is done through the police website, and you can obtain what's called the whom it may concern certificate, confirming that, you know, that basically that the case details, the court verdict, and that the judgment is now fine. Now, one more nuance is that, I guess it's not such a small nuance, but there's also that verdict, the court verdict we're talking about, is still subject to appeal. So it still can be appealed within 15 days from the day of the judgment by the prosecutor, or 30 days from the day of the judgment by the Attorney General. So all that you've already paid your fines, you've already been released, that theoretically or legally that judgment can still be appealed. So really when you can start feeling a little more completely relaxed is 30 days after the judgment, because that's when the last deadline expires. And after that, then basically you can breathe and relax. And that's basically just to kind of to wrap things up, is that your final document or evidence that your case has been closed is this police clearance certificate. It's not required, but it's more kind of for you, for your own peace of mind, that you've done everything possible and that now your record is clear. So although it did happen through the criminal system, and, you know, it is a type of a criminal record, but it's not the kind of criminal record that will prevent for the authorities to issue you a good standing certificate or clearance certificate. So you'll still receive it. So after that, you've received all that, but you still, the vehicle, you've taken the vehicles now. And so the last thing that's left is for you to wait out this 3 months of your license, suspension of license. And after that, once the 3 months have passed, you get your license back and you get your life back on track. So that's basically the process. You see, not so simple, not as straightforward, and not just a slap on the wrist and not just a fine. And so just want to give you a few examples of like real life examples from our practice that we've dealt with, just to give you an idea of how serious this can be. You know, what I'm describing is not just to kind of a scaremongering tactic, but these are stories based on real clients' cases. And some of our alluded to some of these examples throughout this topic, but we had the one client who did celebrate an event kind of around specific time of the year where these kinds of events are usually celebrated, and obviously there was a checkpoint that set around, because the person wasn't actually going to drive the car back. He had called the service to pick up the car, and as you know, a lot of people in living in the UAE would know, there's plenty of these sort of services where you can, they have different names. But it's this like even online app systems where you just request a driver, somebody to come and pick up your car and drive the car home with you. So that's basically the client had done that, but the car was parked a little bit to the side, and so they were trying to pull the car forward closer so to be able to find the driver. And along the same sort of time, the police, who obviously had a checkpoint around the this venue, they stopped him, and they were able to detect alcohol, and then they had did the breathalyzer, and lo and behold, it was fairly high, and so they took the person into detention to jail. But because it was a Thursday night, the person was basically did not have the opportunity, because the prosecutor wasn't going to be hearing any cases until Monday. His next opportunity to hear to be potentially released or request to be released from at least on bail was Monday. So in the meantime, the person spending the night in jail, it's Thursday to Friday, just Saturday to Sunday. So it's already 3 days, and then on Monday, They had a hearing with the prosecutor, as I said, online. But at that point in time, the prosecutor, because it was just simpler for them, they referred the case to court right away. So they said the bail will be decided by the court because the case was already being referred and the court hearing was going to be the next day. And so he was still, even after that, he was still remained in detention until the hearing. In fact, the hearing was the next day, actually. That's right. The hearing was the next day on Tuesday. And so the court heard the case on Tuesday morning, issued a decision just a few hours later, and the decision, the verdict was just a fine and suspension of a license, and there was a reduction in the fine to compensate for the days that he had spent in prison for 100 dirhams per day. And I think that's all. And by the way, the court did not really address, so these were the only fines from all the litany of requests that the prosecutor had made, including deportation, the highest fines and the highest penalties. Ultimately, the court only issued, only applied the financial penalty of 15,000 dirhams, you know, minus the offset for the time spent in jail and the license suspension. So, and now you have the judgment, but the person is still in jail. The judgment alone was not the trigger for him to be released. So then we had to pay the fine, and by the time we paid the fine, and that's, you know, because the judgment is issued, if the later in the day the judgment is issued, the later you'll be paying the fine, and all that information is going to trickle down to the system. So once we paid the fine, we still needed to get a letter from the prosecutor, the stop the search letter, and only with that stop the search letter, then he was going to be released from jail. So this was, this was kind of one of those practical realities that even though the judgment had already clearly set financial fine as the penalty, not a jail sentence, but the person, by virtue of the circumstance, the person was already in jail. So until all the fines and all the sort of paperwork was issued, he was just, in practical terms, was forced to remain in jail until the letter the prosecutor finally issued the letter to stop the search. And then with that letter, you go to jail, you release, and okay. So at least at that point, the person was already free. But that was a week after he was detained. So not, you know, a very small incident, and that resulted in in a week in jail, and then 20,000 dirhams for the fine, plus another 6,000 dirhams for the car impound. So all in all, about just kind of with other sort of fees here and there, it's 30,000 dirhams just for the authorities, three months of license suspension, and a week in jail. So that was a very sort of small, so to speak, case, but wasn't. So that was one. The other case, but interestingly enough, so something as simple as that, as I said, right? And especially in that case, because here the person wasn't actually going to drive home, and he even had proof that he had called the car to pick up the driver to pick up his car. But because the case was a fairly simple case and they moved through the court system so quickly, basically in one day, that's why there was no reason to argue that. And there was, because it was just a reduction in financial penalty. So it was in that case, it was in client's interest to just make the case move faster instead of trying to lower the fine, because lowering the fine would have meant submitting more documents and defense into the case file, which would have prolonged his time in detention. So that was, that was kind of the unfortunate set of circumstances that happened there. Another client, on the other hand, it was a little luckier in some ways, perhaps not so in others, but in this case, it was much luckier. So drinking, driving again, pretty heavy drinking from what we could tell. It's a cocktail of everything, sort of heavy duty, hard liquor. And driving at night with a friend, because it was obviously, it was quite belligerent in driving. Had a car accident, ran into something, I guess, like lost control of the car and hit a light bulb or light or traffic light or something along the road. And so not another car. But he had a passenger in his car, and he panicked and then left the passenger in the car. And so and then basically kind of did a, ran away. But then the next day was able to, obviously received the notices from the police, because the police can trace all of these things quite quickly. And so by the time he handed himself to the police, there was no more alcohol in his blood. So he was obviously held guilty of leaving the car, of having an accident and running from the scene of the accident. That's also a crime. It's a separate crime. And, because he had some witnesses that was sort of corroborated his account that sort of helped him. But ultimately, it wasn't, although the circumstances that led to this event were very much alcohol fueled and sort of result of drinking. But by the time he appeared before the authorities, his blood was clear, and so whatever tests he took, there was no evidence of alcohol in his blood. So while he was still punished by the system, it wasn't for drinking and driving. He was leaving the scene of the accident, and it was just a financial fine, but there was no detention. So, and here is a case that could have been a lot worse, and in fact, the underlying circumstances were a lot worse than the first case. But because of the timing and the circumstances related to, the police's involvement, the person had some extra time, some grace period, and ultimately did not suffer the kind of the sort of loss of freedom penalty or circumstances as the other client. There was another client as well in a different emirate in Abu Dhabi who also same kind of more similar, more akin to the first client, the second client, pretty erratic, pretty heavy drinking, erratic driving, hit something. They actually had two accidents in one night, and then ultimately ran into some sort of a construction site building that potentially might have been considered like a government property. And the police was involved, spent a night in jail, but was kind of released on bail the next day and then had to like pay the fine. This is an interesting example. This is the client, the sort of a bit of a combination of both, but because the police did get involved and he did take the breathalyzer test and there was pretty heavy levels or high levels of alcohol in his system, but because of the circumstances involved, he only spent the one night in jail and was let out on bail. So he, with that process I described to you with regards to the first client, he nearly feel it, right? Because he is not in detention. He basically, the case gets processed from the police to prosecution, from prosecution to the court. That's all kind of done sort of without his involvement. He just had to appear again online from the comfort of his home for the hearing. His lawyers paid the fee. So, but because he was not in detention this whole time, he didn't really feel the process. He didn't feel too as closely as the first client of what was kind of behind the scenes leading to the final verdict. And once again, in that case too, there was a suspension of license for 3 months. There was a fine. I think it was a heavier fine there because there was also property damage involved. But ultimately, so he had paid much higher fines, still the license was suspended, but he only spent one night in jail and then paid a lot more money because there was, damages to the property involved. Still only spent one night in jail. As a result, did not feel the same sort of the gravity of the system and the process as the first client, who arguably had like perhaps the mildest case of the offense. So as you can tell, so from these examples, the outcomes can really vary widely, also depending on the emirate, the timing, and so the injuries and the circumstances around the incident. These examples basically, they matter because once again, the reminder is the same. So it's a zero tolerance and it's always basically the same. It's always been the same. It will remain for the time being. And the timing really makes a big difference. And the detention, the duration of detention often depends on whether it's weekends or holidays that are sort of involved in between. And by the way, if there is a holiday in between, then you really lose out. So we've actually had another client like that where there was detained on a Thursday, but Monday and the following week was basically a holiday week. So he ended up spending, I think, 10 days in detention before he was even able to be seen by the prosecutor. So this is kind of where how the system works and how the case travels from A to Z. And so I hope that that kind of highlights the gravity of these kinds of offenses, and therefore it's really truly unnecessary to put yourself in this situation, because there's so many different alternatives in the UAE. As I mentioned earlier, there's so many different services you can call on, and people can come and pick up your car. Uber, taxi, Careem is so affordable in the UAE, so you should absolutely not be drinking and driving under any circumstances, because it's just utterly unnecessary. So, in conclusion, as I mentioned once again, the UAE's zero tolerance policy for drinking and driving is enforced through a fairly rigorous and multi-stage process involving police, prosecution, and the courts. And each phase, from arrest to release, includes mandatory documentation, strict timelines, and significant legal and financial implications. So understanding this roadmap helps individuals and families kind of navigate the system efficiently and prevent delays and ensure that all clearance steps are properly completed. So that's all for this episode of Logical with Ludmila. If you found this episode useful and you like what we do, you can always find more on our website. That's lylawyers.com. We're also on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And for the full experience, you can watch our video podcast on YouTube. Until next time, stay informed, stay safe, and keep things logical.